Welcome to The Gaggle, an AZ Central podcast where we chat with reporters, experts, and special guests to keep you fully informed on the state's political news. I'm your host, Yvonne Winchett Sanchez. I cover national politics for the Arizona Republic.
And I'm Ron Hansen, also a national reporter for the Republic.
In today's episode, we're talking about the Navajo Generating Station, the biggest coal plant in the West. It's closing. Many say its closure is emblematic of a trend we're going to start seeing across the country. Despite overwhelming support from lawmakers and even the president, the coal industry cannot be saved.
The Navajo Generating Station is a case study for what will be repeated dozens of times across the West and maybe hundreds of times across the country.
The coal industry has been declining for decades.
In the 1960s, President Kennedy talked about saving coal.
Coal's an old fuel, but we're going to find new techniques for using it, which is going to make it one of the most advanced of all human fuels.
President Donald Trump has talked about saving coal. Here in February of last year, he claimed to end the war on coal.
And we've ended the war on beautiful, clean coal, one of our great natural resources.
And our miners have been mistreated. And they're not being mistreated anymore. We're doing tremendous business.
But during his tenure as president, coal plant closures have accelerated.
It's cheaper to meet electricity demand with natural gas, solar, wind, and other forms of renewable energy. So, yeah, coal is going away. Shutting down smokestacks is positive for the environment, but it comes with a cost. The plants and mines that feed them are ingrained in the mostly rural economies across the West. Here to talk about that with us is reporter Ryan Randazzo.
Thanks for having me.
Ryan, give us some background on the Navajo Generating Station. This is something that you've covered for a long time. Tell us why it was created and what it did.
So the plant was built in the 1970s along the shores of Lake Powell. Its power is divided by electric companies in Los Angeles, Las Vegas, Phoenix that split its power. And the Bureau of Reclamation takes a big chunk of that electricity also, and it runs these pumps on the Central Arizona Project Canal. That canal takes water out of the Colorado River and pumps it uphill all the way to Phoenix and to Tucson. So it's been pretty integral to development of the West, powering these major cities and also delivering water to the Metro Phoenix area and Tucson. People fought to keep this power plant open. Environmentalists have long complained that it was causing problems up in the Four Corners area. Obviously, this giant mine up there that was dug to supply the power plant, the haze and pollutants that come out of it. The utilities fought very hard to keep it going. Then Los Angeles decided to back out of its share because California utilities are no longer investing in coal. The Nevada utility backed out of it. Salt River Project came up with a scheme where they would shut one-third or one of the three units there to keep the thing going. But then eventually they realized that it was just not economical anymore. In 2017, they voted to close it. They said they would run it for two more years through the end of 2019 and then decommission the thing. And it's actually running out of coal as we speak and should go dark sometime in November.
So you've taken several trips over the last couple of months up to NGS. Can you describe to us just what it looks like and feels like to be up there?
Yeah, the power plant, it just kind of dominates the landscape up there. So it's a really very beautiful part of the high desert. You don't always see the Colorado River and Lake Powell because they're, below these sort of canyon walls. So at some points you get a perspective of the water up there, but from everywhere you can see this coal plant. The stacks are 775 feet tall. That's bigger than any skyscraper in Arizona. You can see it from miles away. You can be in really secluded, remote parts of the high desert up there and see this thing on the landscape. When you're there, the buildings are just massive. So it's going to take years for them to tear these things down and scrap them. It's really hard to describe how big these facilities are until you're standing there and you realize that you almost like need a bicycle to get from one end to the other. And the ash disposal ponds are just massive areas of disturbed land that need to be reclaimed. So it's really quite a big job cleaning it up. And the mine is the same thing. It's several miles between these different pits and they have a 16-mile conveyor belt that carries the coal over the landscape and over the hills. And it's almost hard to get a feel for how big that mine is in the disturbed area unless you're in an airplane flying over it and can really see these just massive pits that go on and on where they've been digging coal for 40-some years.
What communities does this closure affect?
Well, the power plant is right outside the city of Page, so it will be impacted. The Navajo Nation, the plant's actually on Navajo land. It's definitely going to affect that tribe and also the Hopi tribe, because the mine that supplies it was on Hopi and Navajo land. So those communities all in rural northern part of the state are all going to see a major impact.
What do you think that impact will look like after your reporting trips up there? I mean, how will these families and, job losses affect people up north?
Well, there's about 750 people directly affected who worked at the power plant and the mine when they were running at full capacity before they started to wind things down. So that's, 750 people who pretty much need to relocate to find equivalent work, because there's just not another industry up there in Kayenta or in Page that they can really transition to. One of the people we talked to relocated all the way across the state to St. John's, and we have a clip of him sharing a FaceTime video with his daughter, who's several hundred miles away.
Bye, Daddy. Love you. We'll see you, okay?
My life rotates between work, going to this travel trailer, and staying there, sleeping, eating, and coming back to work. And then on my days off, I would go back up to Page and spend my time up there with them.
Okay, not to reduce this just to dollars, but what kind of economic impact will something like this have? Clearly, it's going to affect a lot of people, but give us a sense of what that means for those local economies.
It's substantial. It's more than 80% of the Hopi tribe's annual budget comes from coal in some form or another. So that's about $13 million a year for that tribe. The Navajo tribe is losing $30 to $50 million a year. The economic benefit to the city of Page is about $50 million a year. And then annually, when you look at the combined economic benefit of the plant and the mine, it's billions through 2044, which is when people thought this power plant would run until.
We've heard a lot from politicians who, have wanted to save it. Who did try to save it, and what were their arguments towards trying to keep it open?
So I think that's a really important point, is that politicians up and down the state of Arizona fought to keep this plant open unsuccessfully in the end. The state legislature tried to save the plant by passing a tax break on coal sales. That was really immaterial in the final decision making. Utility regulators called on the electric companies to work it out and to consider keeping this plant just for security of the power grid. Again, pretty much ineffective, did not move the needle on this. The Hopi tribe sued to keep it open. Peabody Energy, the coal industry, spent a lot of money advertising and lobbying to try and keep it open. Congressional delegation, particularly conservatives, tried to pull strings where they could to keep the power plant open. The tribes were deeply involved in all of this. They tried to force the Central Arizona Project Canal to buy the power to ensure there was a guaranteed customer for the power from the plant. That didn't work out. And as a last-ditch effort, the Navajo Nation was considering buying the plant, and then the tribal council eventually voted against that because they didn't think that would work out well. So again, up and down the state of Arizona, people tried to save this to no avail.
Okay, so it's not for lack of effort. And clearly, this is something that everybody understands is important. But give us a more personal sense of the impact in these communities that this is going to have.
Yeah. So for today, the tribes are more or less economically whole because they haven't had to write a budget minus the power plant and the coal royalties. But next year they will. And there'll be a real reckoning coming. The Hopi tribe has something like 350 employees. And if 80% of their wages are paid through coal royalties and leases and such, then they're going to have a really hard time keeping all of those government positions. And then there's just the family impact where people have moved. Salt River Project managed that power plant on behalf of all the owners, and they pledged in 2017 to relocate all 433 workers who wanted to take another job at SRP. But of course, they don't have other facilities up there on the Navajo Reservation or in Page. So many of those people, hundreds of those workers, have relocated to the Phoenix area, to other power plants spread around the state. And, you know, that meant leaving home for a lot of folks. And talking with some of those people, they're still trying to decide, you know, do I sell my house in Page? You know, they've been at a new job maybe a year, and they're really making some big life decisions on, you know, due to the closure of that power plant.
And you'll be highlighting some of these compelling stories in your multi-part series on the Navajo generating stations closures. Along the way in this reporting, you have heard a lot of compelling stories from people. Can you share one or two with us?
Sure. I mean, we talked to lots of folks who worked at the mine and the power plant, but it's important to note that there is a trickle-down effect from these facilities. So one of the people that we talked to runs a burger stand right next to the Union Hall in Page. You know, this is where the power plant workers frequently gather. He's got signs in his windows, you know, to yes to NGS. And now the plant's closing, and he's probably going to see a big economic impact from that, you know, not having those workers in town anymore because they've relocated. So there's just myriad ways where, you know, the economic benefits of these facilities affect that whole regional economy up there.
What about the environmental angle to the closure?
No doubt there is an environmental benefit to closing these facilities. The coal plant itself was the third biggest emitter of greenhouse gas in the country when it was running at full tilt. So getting rid of that generator saves a ton of carbon emissions. It also, obviously, like every other coal plant, had criteria pollutants. So it put mercury in the air, which eventually affects waterways. It was producing haze, and it's right, 15 miles or so upstream of the Grand Canyon. So there's a major benefit to that. And then, of course, the mine too, these massive pits in the ground where they're digging up coal and these thousands of acres that need to be remediated.
Much of the media coverage on the decline of coal so far anyway is really focused on white workers in Appalachia. But what about the ethnic angle to the closure here in Arizona involving Native Americans?
Well, there's some real environmental justice issues with these facilities in particular. So the mine on the tribal lands, there used to actually be two mines there, and they would take the coal and they would ship it all the way to Laughlin. And the way that you get coal to Laughlin in a pipeline is to fill it with water. So they were drawing down the aquifer on the reservations to slurry the coal to another coal plant. That one eventually closed. That closed in 2005. But there's really, they just haven't made up the water that they took away from those folks. Meanwhile, a significant number of people on both those reservations don't have running water at their homes. And then, as we discussed earlier, the power from this power plant provided electricity to all these sprawling cities in the Southwest, but many people on these reservations also don't have electricity at their own homes. So they provided water and power to the Southwest. These tribes in many places don't have that at their own residences, and they're not going to get it with the closure here. And they don't have a transition to something that's going to replace this for them. So you're talking about economically depressed areas that are going to become more so because of this closure.
Ugh, this is pretty heavy stuff. What are these communities going to do?
Well, Page in particular is lucky, if that's the right word, because they have tourism. You know, they, just by virtue of their location, get millions of people a year going through the town to visit canyon parks in southern Utah, the Grand Canyon, Lake Powell there. So they are going to lean very heavily on tourism in that city to try and make up what they're losing economically. The tribes don't necessarily have that. In particular, the Hopi tribe recently signed a gaming compact, but they don't have a casino themselves. So they are going to have to find some other ways to make up for that.
Are there similar industries or communities that people can compare this to?
There's folks looking at that, particularly for the tribes in the Four Corners area, because there's other coal plants that are also facing closure there. So NGS is sort of just the beginning of the problems for them. They've pointed to the Pacific Northwest, which, of course, in the 2000 time period, lost thousands of jobs because of environmental regulations in the logging industry. And they've said that some of the communities up there that thrived were able to find new industries, and some of them really didn't. There's no guarantee that these communities will find an off-ramp and a way to survive economically. Some of the folks looking at the Four Corners have also made comparisons to Virginia, which has lost a lot of coal jobs. And one of the things that they did in that state to try and bolster the economy is they developed what's called the Crooked Road Music Trail. It's in coal country. There's all these small music venues. They get something like 400,000 visitors a year. And that supports several hundred jobs. So it's not the same type of industry. It's not as good paying as the coal industry, but it's something that other communities have done to sort of backfill in their economy. So turning to tourism, turning to agritourism in Pennsylvania, where people go visit farms in rural parts of the state that used to be supported by the coal industry. So there are people looking at it.
What are communities in other parts of the country doing to stop the decline of coal or support for these coal communities now?
So I don't think anyone has stopped the loss of coal. There is a mining company called Black Jewel that filed bankruptcy this year that bounced checks to more than 1,000 workers in Wyoming and Kentucky. Those are pretty coal-friendly communities, and they were unable to stop you know, the things that are happening to the coal industry. In the last 9 years, U.S. utilities have retired 546 individual coal generators. So one power plant might have multiple 4, 5, 6 generators at it. In 2018, coal consumption in the U.S. was at its lowest level since 1978. And in April of this year, renewable energy provided more electricity for the first time than coal did for the month. So no one is really successfully stopping this trend despite, you know, the political will to support the coal industry. So just because no one can stop it doesn't mean no one's addressing it. In the last year, both Colorado and New Mexico passed laws that will create these offices to help coal communities. And they call them like just transition funds or just transition offices. So they realize that they are not going to stop this trend, but that they have many rural communities that rely on coal. And these offices help train workers. So they provide grants to people who are likely to lose their job to help train them for another industry. And they support economic development projects in these coal communities that are losing their main source of income.
All right, listeners, let's dive into some afterthoughts looking at the political side of this issue. Do you have a sense of how our state leaders might react to the closure this session? Do you foresee any, you know, chance of them setting up one of these types of offices here in Arizona?
I haven't heard any talk of that down at our state capitol. But, you know, last year and the year before, all of their efforts were on saving this coal plant or forcing it to stay open somehow. And that has been ineffective in Arizona and around the country. So, you know, it would probably make sense, considering we have several other coal plants that will eventually close, that Arizona might look at New Mexico and Colorado and what they've done for these transition offices to try and brace these communities for the closures that eventually are coming. The next one in Arizona is very likely Joseph City. It's near Williams and Holbrook. And in 2025, unless something happens dramatic in the power industry, the coal plant there is going to close. We also have major coal plants in Springerville and St. John's that are scheduled to run quite a bit longer. But as you've seen, the landscape is changing quickly. And these economic decisions to shut coal are probably not going to bode well for those communities.
So speaking of economic decisions, what is the upside of doing that? And how is it worth their investment before you sort of get to the worst day?
Well, you know, NGS was given 2 years, and that's just not enough time to develop an entire new industry. Like with the Cholla plant, we have 5 years right now, which is a little bit better. So you know in 5 years, you're very likely to lose several hundred jobs in this small community. You can start now trying to find something for those folks to do and finding a way to support that town. The upside to doing it now is that you're not just pinched right at the end and you're trying to find new jobs for hundreds of workers. It's worth mentioning that Representative Tom O'Halloran also has proposed federal legislation to help the communities impacted pretty much by my reading only by the NGS closing. So the city of Page and the tribes and the school district and basically any entity up there that is losing revenue because of the closure of NGS can apply for federal assistance under his bill.
Well, Ryan, thanks as always for coming on and sharing what you know about this. Listeners, be sure to follow his reporting by going to azcentral.com and clicking local. Ryan, where can people find you on Twitter?
I am at Utility Reporter.
That's it for today, Gaggle listeners. While we still have you, please don't forget to rate and review our show and share it with a friend. If you want to reach out to me on Twitter, I'm at Yvonne Winget.
And I'm at Ronald J. Hansen, and that's H-A-N-S-E-N.
Today's episode was edited and produced by Maritza Dominguez with oversight from Kayla White. Thanks so much for listening to The Gaggle, a podcast from the Arizona Republic and azcentral.com. We'll see you next week.